ideal title. It's called Perfect. And what a performance that was that I attended last night. But you know, my trouble, Peter, talking about the echo of a noise, a one-man memoir last night, is the use of the word performance. What really makes it such an extraordinary thing for me is it's not just a performance. You are totally involved in a very authentic story.
It's a conversation. You know, that's what I really had to work at. What, first of all, doing it was like stepping off a cliff, because I've never done something like this before. I've always hidden behind characters and eyelashes and wagging fingers and umshini arms. And I suddenly thought, hey, man, maybe it's just time to, I mean, really, truly take a hell of a chance. And I don't want people to think it is a performance. It's been created and rehearsed and structured. It's like me and you in my lounge. And that's the feeling I try and get. And that's what seems to have been working last night. People, you know, the first performance was in Grahamstown last year at the festival, just one performance, in the Guy Butler, in that huge 1,000-seater. Me on a little bar stool with 1,000 people sitting there, and suddenly it just really felt like they were sitting with me in my room at home. And that's the wonderful thing about theatre. It actually, it uses the Hollywood in the mind. People see the pictures in their mind as I tell them the stories.
Well, I'm not quite sure if we can then give you an Oscar for this performance. Well, I didn't even get an Oscar for the conversation. But you know, it was a very chilling piece, and I just want to read you something which coincidentally came to me just a week or two ago before this performance. I don't even know the New York Times columnist Roger Cohn,
yes,
whose background is South African. Yeah. He wrote the memoir about his mother, the girl from Human Street. I really have to give you this extract from that, from this column that he wrote. He writes, every Jew of the second half of the 20th century was a child of the Holocaust. So was all humanity. Survival could only be a source of guilt, whether spoken or unspoken. We bore the imprint of departed souls. The silence that ascended was the silence of the lost. It seemed to me that I was raised in silence, and that I was far from alone in that. Language could not accommodate such a volume of ashes. After a while, I wanted to understand the things unsaid in the rush to build on the ruins. But covered over came after me. As a child of the repetitively displaced, I was perhaps a natural target for smothered memory. I wanted to understand where I came from. Is that perhaps what motivated you?
What wonderful words. What an extraordinary writer. And what a memory of the pain. You know, I must be honest with you. When I put this story together, starting with my family, and suddenly I was writing about my father. I never thought I would ever write about my father. I mean, we loved each other, but I don't think we liked each other. We fought all the time, and he criticized me, and he disliked what I was doing. But now I realize that he was frightened of me crossing the line into forbidden territory by criticizing and making fun of the gods on the Olympus of Afrikaner politics. And my mother, this extraordinary, gentle, funny ma who had this giggle like a little, she used to like a squeak in the church when Pa said, "Kom kerku," and we used to go to church, and we were always late. My mother was always late, and we're late, and we go in, and then she sits on a man's hat on the bench, and then she moves the hat, and I sit on the hat. I move the hat, Casey sits on the hat, and we all three start giggling. And you know, in a church, when you start giggling, everybody starts, and there was this, and once the German said, "Mevrouw Eus, die kinders lach in die kerk," your children laughing in church. So, and there was Ma. And there was Ma with this wonderful, gentle, I suppose, nudge for us to not be frightened. We used to go to the ancestors. Tissy would play the piano and I would sing. And Pa would say, "You must win! You must win! Yes, 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 Pa." And Ma would say, "Now listen, enjoy yourself. And if you win, you get an ice cream. If you don't win, you get two ice creams." What a great philosophy of life that was.
And what a great sense of warmth and love.
Yes, absolutely. And so, yes, I mean, I so appreciate what this extraordinary man wrote about the pain. I must be honest with you, the pain was there, but I don't feel pain now. I feel celebration. I feel the fact that now, at last, you know, I answer that question. Peter Burgess, who the hell do you think you are? You know, I know who I am. At last. Second 70 years. And the one thing I want, I want people to sense in this performance, quote unquote, conversation, is go out and talk to your parents. If you've still got a father and a mother, or even as lucky as to have a granny, ask them, when was the happiest time of your life? What were you like when you had your first cigarette? Tell me about your first sexual experience. We've got to talk about these things because they are people. And I never did. You know, and that's what I just keep on thinking. Paul told those wonderful stories. And I didn't ask enough questions because we weren't allowed to. Children must just shut up and do what they're told. Then.
But now children are asking because there's different people actually look at their family trees.
Yes.
People do speak, and I keep saying that everybody has a story. Of course, sometimes they shouldn't tell that story, or it's not really a particularly interesting story, but you do have a story, and it is your duty to find it.
The story is always of the moment. You know, I tell the story to entertain you, but it's not quite the story because the truth isn't always that entertaining. And yet, sometimes the story had terrible beginnings, and yet, celebration of survival at the end. And the fact that I only found out that my mother was Jewish after she died, although while she was alive, some of our best friends were Jewish kids, and I loved going to their houses because there was food, there was the wine, and they were so funny. And they had such wonderful talent. Tizzy once said to mine, the lift at the airport as we went up, she said, oh, Ma, you know, there's Rosenthal, thingy, I can't remember her name now. Desiree Rosenthal, and she's so good, she's going to get the prize because she's Jewish and she's got so much talent. Oh, Ma, I wish I was Jewish. Why didn't Ma say you are? She didn't. So denial was a very big shadow in my past as well.
That silence, that's what you got.
The silence and my title, The Echo of a Noise, it came first. I just suddenly wondered, Echo of a Noise, I thought, hey, ooh, a chrono, you know, I think, got goosebumps. What does it mean? Does it mean I'm the echo of a noise past? Or am I the echo of the noise reinventing itself for the future? Or am I the echo of the noise which was music, which was the wallpaper of my life? Or is it the noise of laughing at things that aren't supposed to be laughed at? It was a wonderful battery of questions that I answer in this experience, which I do now.
But the experience also, I think one needs to say, it is especially poignant because it is also tackled with that degree of humor, that degree of detachment.
My goodness, so important. I mean, I can't do anything without humor. You see, there's a difference between humor and comedy. I mean, I respect comedy because people can tell jokes damn well. I'm not good at that. And you laugh at the joke because it's funny and you want to remember it to tell somebody else. Humor is very personal and it's very seldom funny. It's you suddenly hearing something that makes you realize that that thing represents your fear, and you've laughed at your fear because you're in charge. You don't look away. If you look away, that fear becomes 20 miles high and it will win.
And isn't that the lesson that you did learn from your father?
Yes.
Like that that is steady.
Absolutely.
Should we not tell them that story? Because maybe they've got to go and see.
Yeah, they must come and see. They must come and see. And also, it sort of peels the onion for them as well. So many people in the last few days have said to me, my life and your life are so different, and yet our experiences were so similar. Emotional. People have shed tears. People have laughed and then cried a bit. And you know, that's what theatre is about. Theatre is telling stories. Theatre is really celebrating all the emotions and not being spoon-fed, as we are so often nowadays. And the wonderful thing is somebody said, you know, I sat there for the 90 minutes and there wasn't a single swear word. I said, there was one. He said, yes, but it wasn't a swear word. It was a poetic word in Afrikaans. It was okay.
Yeah, but maybe what it is the noise you're making is helping other people to hear their echoes.
I hope so. I really hope so, because echo is the operative word. There's always an echo for every action. And if the action is good, the echo is very refreshing. If the action is bad, well, we know what that feels like in South Africa.
Refreshing and powerful.
Yeah.
You certainly are getting us to emote and understand and feel those echoes, and we're certainly connecting. And I have to congratulate you on an extraordinary experience. It's not every day that you go to the theatre and walk away from a performance or conversation, whatever you want to call it, with a sense of such authenticity and that sense of soul.
Well, thank you, my gosh, you make me feel quite that I want to go and see it myself.
I must say, you're blushing since. We're speaking to Peter Dirk Ace about an extraordinary conversation he will have with you in his one-man memoir. And he touches upon so many things which touched the soul in very many ways, and it's only on until the 18th of June. So guys, move it. That's Theatre of Ace, The Echo of the Noise, a one-man memoir at Theatre of the Bay.